Good evening, one and all. Yes, a Wednesday, and this is me, Barry, with another book and a chat. Little bit of snow, little bit cold still, but not too bad here in Connecticut. Well, I'm pleased to say a great show today because it's bringing back not one, but actually two of our most popular people on the show. First off, the one and only Steve Berry, a New York Times international best-selling author, multi-million copies in umpteen languages around the world. We missed him last year because we were due to talk about a book, which we'll talk about in a minute, and I think I was ill first and then Steve was ill, so we missed him last year, so we'll catch up with that this year, as well as another new book we've got coming out. Don't forget, he's award-winning everywhere. He's done it, you know, he's The Templar Legacy, for instance, is one of the top 100 thrillers ever written. No, not just recently, ever written. But anyway, I better introduce him. As I said, on the show today, I have the one and only Steve Berry. Hi, Steve. How are you doing?
Great to be back. Thank you.
It's great to have you back. First off, catch up on last year, because last year you had like a one-off standalone book come out, didn't you, with, I think, The Bishop's Pawn, which was something different for you.
It wasn't a standalone. It was a Cotton Malone book, but
it was definitely... Okay.
It was definitely different, though. It was a different book. It was written in first person. It's the only time I've done that. It was a flashback story in which you learn the origin of Cotton Malone and how he became an agent and how he first started off. And it was written to come at the same time as the 50th anniversary of the death of Martin Luther King, because the book deals with the assassination of Martin Luther King and something very interesting and very shocking from that. And it came out last March. It did really, really well. And, there was a lot of discussion about the subject of King's assassination and the book itself. And it's now out in paperback. So it's out there, you know, now where if folks want to read it, they can pick it up in mass market and enjoy it.
Because there's lots of discussion, as you said, about the whole thing about even to, what's his name, James Earl Ray. You know, not a trained marksman or anything like that, and yet it was just like a single shot from hundreds of feet away, etc., in dusk, and, you know...
He only loaded one bullet into the rifle. One bullet in the rifle fired one shot, hit King in the head from about 250 feet in the light of dusk while dangling out a window in a bathtub. And this guy's not a marksman.
Right.
Fashion. I mean, so there are enormous amounts of unanswered questions about King's death because the investigation was basically botched because Hoover decided that he didn't want a conspiracy, that he wanted one guy to be the blame, and King was it, and Ray was it, and he focused on Ray, and they never looked at anything else. There's just a lot of questions regarding it. It's a fascinating thing. The Bishop's Pawn is an interesting novel that deals with all of that. The reader's going to get a pretty good look at it and hopefully raise some questions in your mind.
Right. It's funny how this the government comes into a lot of this stuff. You know, whether it was at the intelligence offices or the actual president himself. I was watching something a couple of weeks ago. I think about Lewis and Clark. And which one was it, Lewis? The one they said he committed suicide, and yet he managed to shoot himself twice.
Nobody knows. Yeah, he died a very mysterious death. And I've often wanted to use that in a novel. I've just never been able to work it in.
How it gets in, yeah.
There were a lot of questions regarding Meredith Lewis's death and what happened and why. That came many years after their expedition, but he was an interesting character, and his death was very interesting, and it would make an interesting hook into a novel. I've just never been able to put a plot together.
Well, the whole thing that they're suggesting, and we'll get to your book in a minute, the whole thing that they're suggesting is the president at the time wanted them to look for Welsh settlements. Because he was worried that the Welsh had landed there originally. There's a whole tribe that spoke Welsh and stuff like that, evidently, and they were worried that the British in Canada would sort of find this out and say that hey, we were here first to America, so you're part of Canada and Britain, sort of thing. So yeah, there's lots of stuff around it, as you said.
It's very interesting. Very interesting.
Okay, so this was the book last year, because we know from talking to you before, you have one come out a year, one that you finished and one that you just started, sort of thing each year. You're doing that sort of format. But now we have another, and I said, yeah, two people returning, popular people, because of course, Cotton Malone is back again this year with your new book, which comes out, I think,
March 5th.
March 5th, that's right, March 5th. So not any day now coming out. And this is the Malta Exchange. Now, Malta, Ireland, fascinating place for a start. Beautiful island. Only country that's ever won a medal for everybody on the island. And there's lots of weird historical stuff within Malta, isn't there?
Very much so. It's a living museum there. It's like walking in the 16th century when you're in Valletta. And you mentioned the medal. They won the St. George's Medal up for holding off the Nazis in World War II in the siege. That was the siege of Malta. You know, more bombs were dropped on Malta than were on London. They took a big hit during the war. This is all mentioned in the novel. The novel deals with some very interesting things. A pope has died. A conclave has been called, but one of the cardinals has fled Rome for Malta in search of a 4th century document.
Oh.
And Cotton is after him. And it's a very fascinating document. It's a very fascinating issue. This is not a book about a great secret that will destroy the Catholic Church. In fact, it's just the opposite of that. Every character in this novel, the last thing in the world they want to do is destroy the Catholic Church. It deals with a very interesting issue from history. It goes all the way back to the Council of Nicaea in 325 AD.
Wow.
When everything fundamentally changed for Christianity, in a sense, what we call Christian today was pretty much defined in 325 AD. It's an interesting issue. It's a fun adventure. It starts in Lake Como. It goes down to Malta, then it ends up in the Vatican, and involves Mussolini and Churchill and some letters between them that are the matter of legend, and some really cool and neat stuff from history. It's an international adventure because Cotton, I did 5 books in America, and now Cotton's headed back overseas now, and he's going to be overseas for a while, back to his roots in Europe and doing things. I'm probably more than Europe. I want to get him over to the Far East. I want to get him down to South America, too.
Oh, right. See, we were a bit worried, I think, last time or the time before. Cotton was taking a break.
Well, he was kind of he was in America, and he was doing his American things. And we consciously wanted to do that because we wanted to build the American audience, and we did. And we did it worked. It did great. Now I want to get back to the roots and get back over to where the adventures, the overseas adventures, which mainly there's, you know, an international The adventures are really basically international with just a little touch of America, where the last 5 books have been American with a little touch
right.
of international.
I remember, yes. Now, Malta, isn't that it's not Knights Templar, is it? The Knights of Malta, is there a different
thing?
We're
going to big difference. Knights Templar were wiped out in 1307. The Knights of Malta still exist. They're 900 years old, and they're still there. And they're not in Malta anymore. They're headquartered in Italy, but they do have a presence in Malta. And they're a humanitarian organization today, but I've resurrected something within them that used to exist within them a long time ago. I've kind of resurrected it inside them, and they get involved in this intrigue. So you're going to learn a lot about the Knights of Malta, which are a fascinating organization.
Oh, crikey. I mean, and some of the places in Malta are beautiful. I mean, there's old churches. Yeah, considering all the bombing they had, it's amazing how much still exists.
It is amazing. It took a lot of hit. And the co-cathedral in Malta, the main church there, is the most beautiful church in the world to me, and many consider it the most beautiful church in the world, and it has a very unique floor of 400 marble tombs that are in the floor.
Right,
they're quite unique,
right.
And they figure into the treasure hunt that Cotton gets caught up in.
Right, yeah, because I've been to Malta a couple of times myself, beautiful place. The only trouble I had while I was there that we couldn't go in the sea because it was being invaded by Portuguese men of war. But apart from that...
Well, I was there. I had the same thing. When I was there on the second research trip, we went out on a boat because we were going to go out and do a little snorkeling off the island, and they were everywhere.
Yeah.
They were all over everywhere. You couldn't get in the water. I mean, that's the most I've ever seen. There were just hundreds and hundreds of them.
Yeah.
You could not jump in the water anywhere without touching water.
Exactly. I mean, as you say, and it's jellyfish, nothing. You realize what they actually are. No way.
These were everywhere. These were just all over. You could not, you would have, just jumping in, you'd been hit by 10. There was that many of them in the water, and I'd just never seen that many jellyfish in one place.
So is Cotton by himself, or is he got a sidekick with him?
He's got a sidekick. Luke Daniels has come with him this time. I brought him back this time. And Luke is growing up. He's not as young as he was in the other books, and he's getting a little more experience, and he's getting a little more confidence. So him and Cotton team up together to deal with this. Stephanie Nell's involved in it. And then mm-hmm. there's a couple of bad guys, very interesting bad guys, a couple of twin brothers, and they are, you know, figure very prominently in the story. And it's a good adventure, hearkening back to the Templar legacy, and has that Templar legacy feel about it.
Yeah, I mean, the whole Templar stuff is so in the news these days with everything on the television, from Oak Island, you know, through to, you know, lots of other stuff. There's so much mystery around the whole Templar stuff, and, you know, and as you say, your book, The Templar Legacy, one of the sort of top books of all times. It's amazing how little we know in the end about it, apart from the fact that Friday the 13th isn't a very good day for them.
No, that was the day they were arrested, and that's why it has bad luck associated with it. But the Templars were wiped out, and most of their property was given to the Hospitallers. The Hospitallers became the Knights of St. John, who became the Knights of Malta. So there's a connection all the way back. The Knights of Malta today are basically the Hospitallers of 900 years ago. They're headquartered in Rome in two small villas, and those are the smallest country in the world. Smallest country in the world is the Knights of Malta villas in Rome, because 150 nations recognize the Knights as a sovereign entity.
Oh, really? Was it Vatican City? Is this different to Vatican City?
Oh, yeah, Vatican City's much bigger.
Wow.
The Knights of Malta have two villas there. The reason why they have this extra status is because when Napoleon threw them off of Malta in 1798, they had that status. And when they reestablished themselves in the middle of the 19th century, they were recognized by countries around the world as still having that status, even though they were no longer on Malta. They now have a presence on Malta. They have a long-term lease on the castle there, Castle San Angelo, which is what was once their headquarters. It has been remodeled, and you can tour it now and go through it, and there's a lot of history there of the Knights of Malta.
I bet that must be fascinating. I mean, I know it was, remember it being there, but I don't think it was they let you in when I was there.
No, they just started about a year or two ago. When I was there, they were just finishing the remodeling. They have not opened it yet, but now I believe it is open and you can tour it.
So the fact that not just in the Bishop's Palm, but now in the new book, in the Malta Exchange, that Cotton's back and everything, are people happy that he's back? Because I know some questions.
Yeah, they love. He's gotten quite popular, which is kind of cool that you create this character out of nothing, and people really like him, and they want to know what he's up to. And he's back, and he's doing what he used to do, you know, with the international adventures, and he'll keep doing that now. I pretty much will stay international for the long term future, you know, down the road. Now I've done the American books. Not to say there might be something American here and there, but the books will have a definitely much more international feel. There's places, as I said, I have not sent Cotton. Far East is one of those. South America is another. I very much want to get him. Africa is another place I'd like to get him into.
Right.
So there's some places I want to send him on, and some adventures I want him to take.
What about, I mean, obviously people know, we've heard you before, you're one of the founding members of the International Thriller Writers, and we've talked before about how you went to the war zone area and stuff like that, a group of you before. How's the writers group going?
Doing very well. We're now approaching 5,000 members around the world. You know, when we started 14 years ago, you know, we had nothing, and it's just amazing how many we have. You know, we pick up new members constantly, and it's grown a lot. It's huge. Our conference every year in New York is called Thriller Fest. We have it in July of every year. It's open to the public. Public can come, and you know, we have fans that do come to it. But it's basically a trade meeting of the thriller genre. It's summer camp for thriller writers, and so we get together every year. It's grown. It's huge. We have over 1,000 people that come to that conference now.
Terrific.
And it's just, ITW is just doing wonderful. The Thriller Awards that are given out for the best thriller novels of the year have now gained quite a bit of recognition and have become, you know, up there and on status and par with the Edgar Awards. So they're all, it's very neat to see this organization grow and mature.
Yeah, it's interesting because, yeah, I've had yeah, but, you know, in between shows with you, yeah, quite a few thriller writers, and it, you mentioned it, and oh yes, you know, we had a terrific event and all that sort of stuff. So it's really interesting how it has sort of grown since it first started. Obviously,
it's very big. We have a lot. So we have 80% of our members are working thriller writers.
That's great. I mean, apart from that, of course, you know, you and your wife Elizabeth, you created History Matters as well. How's that going?
Doing real well. We do 2 to 3 events a year now. We used to do a little more, but we cut it back to 2 to 3. We've raised about $1.3 million for various historical projects around the country.
Wow.
And, you know, we go around and help communities raise money for their various restoration projects, and it's been quite gratifying. I mean, it's fun to do. We just did something last weekend with the Amelia Island Book Festival up in Amelia Island, Florida. Mm-hmm. We helped raise $100,000+, which bought a book for every kid in the schools.
Oh, terrific.
Every kid in the schools got a young adult book, and not only that, we had the author of the books come to the schools, see them, talk to them, sign their books. It was really quite amazing.
Great.
12,300 books last week. We consider literacy part of our heritage.
Yep.
So History Matters deals with literacy and tries to help with that as much as we can.
That's terrific. And of course, these days, you're more and more, especially in America, there's things being discovered and realized that, you know, so many countries that came to America before Columbus did. I mean, you go back to, they're talking about the Phoenicians and the Egyptians and the Romans, and across the country there's so many bits of history that haven't been sort of investigated or realized, you know, in the past, or perhaps people have forgotten or hidden the fact that they found it.
There are mysteries still here. They're here. I have to resist them a little bit because there's American again, and I want to keep cotton overseas.
Right.
Or so, but there's still a few here. There's still a little there. Not to say that I won't venture over there and deal with one or two of them down the road. But you know, there are some things that are here that could make for an interesting Cotton Malone adventure.
Well, Cotton's in Europe, so where might he be heading next?
Well, he's headed to Poland next.
Oh, nice.
That book is finished. I've been wanting to do a Polish book for a long time. Finally, I've got Cotton to Poland and Krakow and the salt mines and all the cool things that are there. And he'll be headed there next spring in a book called The Warsaw Protocol. So that's where he'll be headed. And that book is finished. And you stay a year ahead in the book business. So
exactly, yep.
I'm completely done and turned that in. And like I said, I've been wanting to send him there. Poland's one of my favorite places in the world, and we've been there several times. And I went there twice to research this novel, and so I think the reader's going to have a lot of fun with this book.
He hasn't found that gold train in one of the salt mines, is he, at all?
No, we don't deal with that. This is something completely different. We're going to do something completely different here, and I try not to do what's been done. And
yeah.
That gold train, of course, is sort of the thing of myth and legend.
Yeah.
I don't think they'll ever find such a thing.
No, I mean, it's like Attila the Hun fascinates me, and the whole bit around here.
Very much so, yeah, and particularly where his grave is located.
Well, yeah, where his heart is or his grave is, whatever.
Yeah, where his grave is located is quite remarkable, because they say that buried with him was a fabulous treasure that was buried with him, along with a lot of people to keep him company in death.
But yes.
They completely obliterated his grave and killed everybody who dealt with it. And to this day, they've never found Attila the Hun's tomb.
No, I think end of last year there was a program sort of still hunting for it and everything like that.
Yeah.
And,
great thriller.
Oh, terrific. I mean, there's lots like that. The Ottoman Empire. I mean, the Ottoman Empire, that was like 600-700 years. Longer than any, you know, Britain, France, Romans, and more together. It's a fascinating place.
I would love to do something with there if I could come up with something. It's definitely in my idea file of the Ottomans, which goes back all the way to the Byzantine and ties it all. You know, all of that would be just very, very interesting.
People don't realize it. They were still powerful. First World War. You know, they think, oh, it's sort of medieval times, but no, it goes right up to the First World War. It's unbelievable.
As I said, there's a novel there perhaps one day. It's something that it's another area that I've been looking at. Just never haven't put it together, but you never know.
No, you never know. You never know indeed. So you got the next one sorted, as we've been in Poland, which again is a fascinating country in itself because it's been part of so many other countries. during its time.
It had a terrible history of destruction. I mean, the country was eradicated from the map in 1795. Russia and the Turks and Prussia just basically conquered it and wiped it out. It came back later on into the 20th century. Then the Germans took it, and then Stalin took it.
Yeah,
it's had a tough road. And some of that is self-inflicted. Some of that is very much self-inflicted on itself, and all of that's explored in the novel. I think the reader's going to get an interesting understanding of Polish history that they may never have figured before. It is a fascinating place, but it's also a story of resilience.
Yes,
they hung in there, and they come back every time.
Yeah, indeed so. And as you mentioned, these salt mines that are still there.
Oh, God, that's incredible. That was one of the most fun adventures I've had. They took me down into the lower levels, the very lower levels of the mine. I mean, we're down there. It's pitch black. You only have the light on your helmet. It was quite an experience to go down in there. And Cotton's going to do all of that and get down in the middle of all of that.
Because, there's lots of supposedly things hidden from the Germans with their art theft and everything still in there. They don't know. I mean, I've been to... Go ahead.
No, the Germans did that very much so. The Poles not so much in their mind, but the communists had control of those salt mines for a long time.
Yeah.
And folks don't really know what they did with it, so that made for great fodder for the novel.
Right, I bet. I mean, they're fascinating places anyway. I remember, I think it was in Austria. We were in Salzburg, so it couldn't have been that far from Salzburg. And the salt mines there, and the guy takes you down on these sort of like slides, for want of a better word, as you go down the levels. And he's just got a rope which he hands under his arm to slow you down.
That's the way they used to do it. And now the salt mine in Krakow is a little more. They made it a little nicer. The tourist levels on levels one and two are like an underground shopping mall. I mean, it's quite remarkable what they've done in there. It's beautiful. It's well put together. They have a conference center down there. They have a church, a cathedral. They have all kinds of things in there. Now, once you get down below level two, though, down to level nine, it's a whole other story down there. And that's where I went down. It was really cool.
That's not where you've got the sort of steps going up. Side by side. Steps, and you go down on one and then step onto the other one and then step. It's not that place, is it?
No.
Okay, I'm trying to think. No. I can't. There's a name for them. I can't remember what it is, but I remember something like that. Okay, so that one's done, ready for next year.
Yep.
Knowing you, you've got an idea brewing or being started writing for the following year.
Well, I have to start writing the next book because I got to turn it in next year. So Cotton will be back in 2021. It's an adventure that deals with Germany.
Oh.
Yeah, I've been wanting to do one. I'm going to Germany in April to do some research on the novel, and it's going to be an interesting adventure dealing with Germany and something that I've been wanting to write about for a long, long time. I can't say a little more than that because I don't want anyone to take it away from me.
Exactly. And Germany is another place with so many different parts and history.
I love that country. Been there many times. Fascinating place. This is something that I've been wanting to do for a long time. It's an interesting story. No one's really touched it in fiction before, so it's going to be a lot of fun.
Okay, and I reckon Cotton's glad to be back in Europe for a bit, but as you say, I'm sure he'll be popping back to America from time to time.
He will. He's not forgot about it, but right now, for the next 4, 5, 6 years, it's pretty much an international adventure with a little American angle to it, just like it was in the first nine or ten novels.
So apart from Cotton, any other, because occasionally you bring out another book, anything else on the horizon?
Nothing on the horizon. No, I can only stick with him.
There you go.
I found that I can only write one at a time, unfortunately. I can't do more than that. It's just too much research, too much going on. Now, I do have a novella coming out, though.
Oh, yeah.
In July with MJ Rose. We did one last year. It's a Cassiopeia Vid adventure. Last year we did it for the Museum of Mysteries. This year it's going to be The Lake of Learning is coming in July, and it's a story with Cassiopeia. It's about 30,000 words.
All right.
Novella. It's a novella, and it focuses on her. That will be coming out in July, and I think the readers are going to really like it. It's a good, fun adventure takes place in southern France and deals with some very interesting issues that I think they'll have a lot of fun with.
Yeah, because I mean, I remember Cassiopeia from before, you know, and there were lots of people, you know, were sort of really interested in her and hoping that she'd come back. So that's great.
Yeah, I'd like her to have her own novel, but I can't write a novel with her, but I can write a novella with her.
Right.
And so, you know, MJ and I write those together, and we're hoping to keep them up. We're hoping that folks will like them, and we'll be able to keep giving her her own adventures each year.
Yeah, that's ideal for one that hasn't got so much depth. You know, you've got an idea, but you can't make it into anything really big. So, you know, make Cassiopeia, you know, have it in a smaller one sort of thing.
Yeah, and I can do the novellas, particularly when I get some help. You know, when MJ can help me out and kind of fashion up a first draft, then I take it and do the second draft, and then we go through it and polish it up together. It comes up a good story, and this is a fun story. I'm finishing up the edits on it right now, and I think my readers are going to really like this.
Right. Well, I know, as always, it's been great fun chatting to you and a privilege chatting to you. But what I'm going to do now, Steve, is hand the show over to you so you can tell everybody where, of course, people can find you and about all your books as well.
You can find out all about me at steveberry.org, which is my website. Everything's there about the books, History Matters, all the things. The Malta Exchange comes out March 5, which is not that far away, about a week and a half. It's up for pre-order now at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, all the sites. And so you can definitely pre-order it. If you want a personalized copy or a signed copy, though, you can go to Barnes & Noble. They have a signed copy, but a personalized copy you can order through the Poison Pen, which you can do through my website. You'll see that on there, and I'll be going there in a week and a half and signing all of those books. So
great.
There's lots of ways you can get one.
Well, Steve, thank you so much for joining us today, giving us an update and a look at what's coming up next as well. As always, it's always a great pleasure chatting to you. Great luck with this new book. It looks a fascinating story, and I'm sure, once again, many, many people will enjoy it.
Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Well, there you go. My guest today, Steve Berry. Yes, one and only Steve Berry. Chatting to us, first of all, about the book we missed last year, The Bishop's Pawn. And then the new one, The Malta Exchange, both Cotton Malone. Cotton is back in Europe, as he said. We're back there, Malta and Italy a bit as well. And as always, he gives us an inkling into what his next year's book is in Poland. And as he said, he's got another one already on the burner after that. It's set in Germany. Well, that's great. As always, thoroughly enjoyed, and I'm sure a lot of you did as well. Well, that's it for now. Don't forget, I'll be back on Sunday between 5 and 6 on New Visions Radio here, where I will be producing an hour of music from the year 2000 to 1900, backwards 1900 to 2000, if you like. Those were the days. And then from 6:30 to 7, 30 minutes of solid British invasion, music from the British invasion of America in the 60s and 70s. And then I'll be back on Tuesday and Wednesday next week with more book and a chat. Well, that's it. I will see you next week. But until then, as always, there's one thing left to say. Don't forget...